Ladies and gentlemen, it's the Dr. Soren Show, discussing health topics that matter to you. The views expressed on this show are those of Dr. Soren and his guests and do not represent the views of Blue Sky Broadcasting. Consult your doctor before making any changes.
Hey everybody, this is Dr. Soren, and I'm super excited to have Jeff Sutton with me today.
Yeah.
I think our audience will love hearing about your tales of adventure. This is stuff you read about in books, but you live this every day. So let's just start. You are a missionary, humanitarian, what you want to call it. You work in South America.
South and Central America, yep. I live in Belize.
And you basically help the people there. You build schools.
Yeah, we do just a wide variety of things. We have a volunteer training center there in Belize where we have students come for 3 months, and they receive training. It's collegiate age students, post grad. Some of them are in the middle of school who want to take a gap year and serve somewhere. And so we do maybe like an orientation, you might think of it as, and then we help them get connected to different types of service projects. So 3 months out of the year, I'm there and I participate in that kind of orientation. And the other, 6 months, it's 3 months on, 3 months off. The other 3 months that I'm not, the next 3 months would be aviation. I do medevacs and...
So this is kind of our health connection, but as I thought about it, my show is always focused on health, but you do a lot of medevacs. You're not a medical person. Your wife is.
Yeah, my wife's a nurse. I'm an A&P mechanic and a pilot, and so I do, you know, it's a variety of types of things, everything. And sometimes, you know, of course, with the medevac, we have, you know, some interaction on the health side, but... Yeah, my wife's the nurse. She's the more of the expertise in the area.
Well, as I've listened to your stories and kind of followed you, I've been super inspired by what you do. As far as the humanitarian missions, you are a volunteer.
Yeah.
This is not a road to riches, but you just volunteer and serve.
Yeah, that's right. You know, there's a lot more things to life than things.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like being a blessing to other people is very rewarding, and it's not what you get back from it. Like, what it's interesting, you know, in today's society, it's all about what you receive.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an old adage that says, hey, it's more blessed to give than receive, and that's really true. No matter what, you know, background you have, the joy that comes from bringing joy to someone else's life and making a difference is really something that money can't really buy.
Well, and that's what inspired me a lot, because right now, you know, we're in this COVID era, we're having all these protests, and so I just thought it would be great. You're doing something so positive that's, you're outside of the country and you're just serving and helping people, and to me that's really inspiring.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, it's awesome. I love what I do. I was thinking about a conversation we had a couple days ago about how I got up here, and, you know, because we live in Belize. Belize is locked down. It doesn't have any COVID.
For those that don't know, where's Belize?
Belize is right between south of Mexico, between Mexico and Guatemala. The Guatemala borders the western side of Belize, and Mexico borders the northern side. And, of course, the Caribbean Sea has the second largest reef in the...
People forget that Australia's got the biggest reef.
Yeah, and...
But,
Belize has got the second largest.
So beautiful area.
It is. It really is incredible. Belize has an incredible culture. It's interesting. You have a very diverse culture. You know, you have the Afro-Caribbean culture, and then you have Garifuna, and then you have Mayan, and then you have just the Mestiza, which is, you know, Latin American, Spanish, Mexican, Guatemalan immigrant, and then you have Asian, Chinese, Hindus, and Mennonite. There's a lot of Mennonite, very large Mennonite population, which, you know, just creates for a very diverse, and, you know, Belize is really interesting. They're kind of accepting of all this. You know, the Mennonites, they don't drive cars and run the steel wheel tractors, but yet, you know, they've kind of integrated into society there. They have probably 5 or 6 large colonies.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, anyway, I feel like Belize is, that's something that's kind of unique about it's kind of a mixing pot of culture and different perspectives and views. And of course, actually, there's a fairly large number of Americans that go there on tourism, for sure, because it's an English-speaking country. It's safe. It's a British colony. Mm-hmm. And then aside from that, retirees, people who, you know, those are just transient, but then the retirees that, you know, buy a piece of property down there, dream living on the beach, and, you know, so you have a fair bit of expat, they call them, population as well.
And let's just quickly talk about your link to this area. You married a girl from Montana, just across the border here.
Yeah, in fact, one of my, right after I got my Instagram rating, I remember I took the small trainer that we had, and I flew it from Michigan all the way to Montana. I think it took me, I want to say about 16 hours to fly out here in that little trainer. I remember I had to, I was, got stuck in Billings. It was like 105 there, and I was afraid I wouldn't make it over the pass to Bozeman. So I waited till like 5 o'clock that evening, slept in the back of the plane in Bozeman. I was 19 years old on the adventure of my life. And then I got to just across the border, just out of Clark Fork there. My wife lives right real near that area. And anyway, yep, I asked her to be my girlfriend then just a few days later. And she had just gotten back from serving in India.
Wow.
Right there in Calcutta by where Mother Teresa was in another, a different orphanage, but doing the same kind of work. And that was in, I better not tell the dates, but that was an incredible... That was a while back. Anyway, we'll say that.
Yeah, wonderful. So that's your kind of link. So that's how I get to see every now and then.
Yeah, you come visit. Yep. Got to come see the mother-in-law and, you know, the family out this direction. Yeah. So
wonderful. So you've told me a little bit about the people of Belize. So it's a very diverse culture. So let's just talk about some of the work you do. Maybe even some of the medevacs.
Sure. So, you know, we had just wrapped up a training session and... our students, they go and work in schools and orphanages and, you know, all types of clinics, all kinds of humanitarian and mission institutes. So, it's a combination of all kinds of things and kind of scattered around the globe. We have about 5 students or maybe 6 students in an orphanage in Honduras.
Wow.
And so... they probably are assisting somewhere around 50 children. And I got a phone call from them the other day. And it one of their house parents, their biological child, he was 14 years old, and he had a brain tumor.
Mm-hmm.
And they asked me if I could medevac him up to the States for them. I said, yeah, I'd be willing to do that. He needs a visa. And they said, well, we're working on it. Tomorrow we'll have the confirmation from the consulate. And so later on that same day, they called me back and said, you know, it's very urgent. Because I said, well, once you get the visa, probably next week I'll try and, you know, this was on a Tuesday. And I was, you know, funny thing about flying. Here in the States, it's really easy. You know, you just hop, you want to go somewhere, you climb in your plane, you fly a flight plan. And you go.
Off you go.
Yeah. Not the case in, you know, international flights. You know, you got to get permits to get into the country. And, you know, a lot of those permitting take at least 24 hours. And then add COVID on top. With COVID, all these airports are shut down. They don't do any, you know, no airlines are coming in. Nothing's coming and going. In fact, the traditional flight approval path aren't even open. You're not even contacting the same institution. So I wasn't exactly sure how I was going to be able to get that done. But I was able to get some contacts in Honduras and work on that. But when I originally talked to him, I said, I'm going to at least need a week to get flight permits. Well, they called me back that afternoon and said, is there any possibility we can do it faster? We had a really awesome opportunity that somehow the director of the St. Jude Hospital has found out about his case. Now this young man, he can't swallow now, and this tumor is growing very, very rapidly. Mm-hmm. And this director of Jude Hospital, St. Jude, said, you need to get him here as quick as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Quick as you can. I thought, man, boy, that's a tall order in this time and, you know, of with COVID.
We've got to take a break right now, but hold that thought and we'll be right back and finish up that story.
Welcome back. This is Dr. Soren, and we're talking to Jeff Sutton, a gentleman I highly admire that works as a mission pilot and works in South America helping other people. And Jeff, you were just finishing up a story. You were telling us how you're trying to fly this young boy up to the United States and during this COVID for medical treatment for his brain tumor. And so go ahead and pick it up there. So you are working to get all the authorizations to be able to leave the country.
So Wednesday morning at 10 o'clock, they confirmed they got the visa, and I immediately started the process for an air ambulance medevac into Honduras.
Because you said otherwise, there's no planes coming in and out.
Yeah.
But because you ran under a medevac ambulance,
yes,
you're able to get a...
It's a special authorization.
Mm-hmm.
So that special authorization, basically, I stay on the plane, they bring the patient, I do the refuel, and I'm out of there. So, but the interesting thing was, I as a pilot had to do all that paperwork. They would not let me use a handler. And
it's a handler.
A handler is a person who does all that kind of paperwork.
Kind of
for
a third party.
You give them the details of the flight, and they deal with contacting all those entities. They would have nothing of it. Only the pilot operator could do the request and fill out the form. So I was hurriedly trying. As soon as at 10 o'clock, I'm like, well, now I've got to go get the plane ready, and I'm trying to... Somebody sent me a form, and you couldn't fill it out. It was a PDF, but it wasn't an editable PDF. So I was like, oh man, so I just printed it and hand filled it out and then scanned it and sent it to him. Well, I'm driving down the road to the airport to go do the test flight and just make sure everything's good on the plane. Cause of COVID, I had it parked for about a couple months. So, and they text me back and said, oh, it's gotta be filled out by a computer. And, you know, so here I'm away from my computer now, and so I'm downloading apps on my phone trying to figure out how I can make it fill and a little text box and stuff. So I'm filling it out, and I finally get it all filled out, and I send it back to him, and then I got to get Belize Civil Aviation to let me do a local flight. And so I finally get everything juggled out, do my local flight, and I land again, and I get a response from him, and they're like, oh, you didn't give us the destination airport. And I'm like, what? In Honduras, I'm like, I didn't give you the destination airport. And I look. And sure enough, you know, because you're trying to fill out this PDF on your little phone, and I missed the box, so I fill that out again, resend it to them, and they finally give me a response approving the flight in at 7 o'clock that night. Now, I coordinated everything that I would try and get in there about 9 o'clock the next morning. This is Thursday morning. So it's basically refuel, fill up in Belize, load up. I had a couple of people who were, I was repatriating to the U.S., and I am from some students and things like that. So I was planning on taking three of them and then just pick up the mother and the father and the boy with the tumor. And so I get to the airport, and the director of immigration is like, oh, you've got to have an authorization to leave. It's like an authorization to leave.
Now, you've been doing this, just for people to know, for 16 years or
something?
Yeah,
I've been flying for about, over doing this overseas things for 16 years. And I've lived in Belize for 9 years.
So you've
I come and go all the time. I do the flight permit process. But it just happens to be that COVID, of course, changes everything. And, you know, the reality is COVID changes everything on kind of a semi, you know, wait 2 days and it'll be different. You know, it seems like that's kind
changing
of
changing by the minute.
It really seems to be that's how the ride's rolling right now. So all of a sudden now, before you would just get an entry permit and make sure you got the insurance and all the documents in order. But when you leave, they could care less when you leave or how you leave, but not this time. So here I am, I'm filling out a departure request. It's not civil aviation that approves it. It's this oversight committee of, you know, they don't even tell me who's on it, but I, you know, different ministries in the, or, you know, in the government have to approve my departure. So, you know, you can imagine bureaucratic things, nothing is fast. You know, that's kind of one of the challenges as in the work that I do, you face with international work. I mean, you just got bureaucracy all over the place. So you learn to try and cope with it. And under normal circumstances, you just wait. But here I've got this medevac. I've got this kid that I'm trying to, he's scheduled for surgery in a certain time. And I'm trying to get him up there so that we can we can meet these schedules, and it's just like really intense. So here I am, I'm in the immigration office, and I'm waiting for this permit. And while I'm waiting there, I'm not really, it's not like the booths like you would have at an airport. This is like their snack room, kind of like you would more, it was the
like
lounge.
The break room,
yeah,
for the employees
exactly.
There.
Exactly. So I'm sitting there waiting and visiting with them, and one of the immigration officers begins to ask me about the news of what's happening in the U.S. Belize is really kind of we're fairly connected. We should be a province, really, in some ways, because, we have little to do with Britain, even though we're a colony. We have the only thing that's British is our law system, but.
Do you drive on the wrong side of the road?
No, we drive American vehicles. We drive like Americans. We eat American food. We drive American vehicles. Everybody goes up to the States. It's pretty much a little America down there. But anyway, so they're telling me about all this news that's going on up there, and I got to be honest. I told her, I got to be honest with you. I quit watching the news a long time ago. I said, it's all over the place. I was like, it's just kind of distracting and frustrating. I just said, I can't make any, I just quit watching. It was just like, oh man, it's just terrible, what they're doing to people. And she begins to start telling me how, of all the atrocities and how, and kind of insinuating that I don't understand what it's like to be marginalized because, I'm white.
Mm-hmm. And what race and nationality?
She's Afro-Caribbean, so, and, I gotta be, I've been living overseas for 16 years. I'm race blind. I mean, to me, people ask me, when I first started, they asked me if I was American, because I got the Latin term is gringo, and, so I've got that kind of a face. And but after a while, you lose the accent, and pretty soon they ask me if I'm from Brazil or I'm from somewhere else, and but when you see I just see people now, it's just I don't even necessarily. I mean, I love America, but I'm once you live away from the culture, American culture, it seems somewhat foreign to me now too. It's just because I'm used to. I'm a mix of all kinds of things. So anyway, people just from first sight, they make assumptions. I said, well, one of the things I can, I've understood as a foreigner, you always are somewhat, and I don't want to use the word disadvantaged, you just don't have the same status as a national.
Right.
And it's logical. I'm a foreigner. I'm requesting to live in your country. It's like, as a foreigner, you're not going to, get all belligerent on an immigration official in another foreign country. Yeah. They make the rules, man. So if you want to be there, follow the rules. If you don't, beat it. There's, you're the one wanting to come here. And so you're
at their mercy.
You're at their mercy, and you don't have the same rights as a national. It's just, it's how it is, And so... You understand. I mean, in that sense, I can understand, and I have been treated unjustly in numerous occasions. That at least you feel that way,
right?
And but and so I tried to explain that a little bit, and she's like, "Oh, but you just can't ever understand." And I said, "Well, that's true,
Jeff, we've got to take a quick break right now, but hold that thought. We'll be right back. We're back. This is Dr. Soren. We're talking to Jeff Sutton, and we're talking about an encounter where you were trying to medevac a patient out to the United States from Honduras in order to get medical treatment, and the run-in you were having with an immigration official. So go ahead and pick it up right there.
But I said, as she was kind of pressing that thing, I thought, it's interesting. There was probably about, I don't know, maybe 8 or 9 immigration officials in that room.
So all these immigration officials there.
Yeah, they're kind of listening to our conversation, and she was all kind of riled up about it a little bit, And My personality is just not that way. I don't really get riled up about things like that. But I said, you know what? Wait a minute. I said, you know what? But I will tell you what I do understand for sure. I said, I do understand about privilege.
Okay.
And that got her attention.
I said, yeah. It got quiet all of a
sudden. Yeah, everything got quiet. I said, oh yeah, I definitely understand about privilege. I said, I'm privileged. And my children are privileged. In fact, my children live a very interesting lifestyle. I say, you know, my children, all of them have been born overseas. Well, my first daughter actually was born in Montana. And then probably about maybe within a month and a half after we got all the paperwork, passports and stuff, we went back overseas. So my other two children were born overseas. So they come back and they see the American lifestyle. And as Americans, it's quite normal, but the rest of the world does not live that. So, you know, to have the toys and the plastic playhouses and the slides and the swing sets and the boats and the jet skis and, you know, all the things that we kind of consider as normal, that's not very normal for the rest of the world. And we've chosen to live a very simple lifestyle. There's nothing wrong with the other things, but the simple lifestyle that we've chose to live is a great one. Mm-hmm. My kids have different, they see the world. My kids are super privileged. And I tell them that, you know, you guys are wealthy. When they go up there, they don't necessarily feel very wealthy. But then when they move down there, and we live in a 1,000-square-foot little ranch house. It's kind of normal.
With three kids.
Yeah, but there's no winter. My kids are never inside. They're out. We live in the country. My kids are running around. They have a great time. Anyway, you know, I've got a shop 50 feet from the house, and my son's always building stuff down there, and they got the tree forts and the rope swings, and I got swings. They got all kinds of stuff. But in the village that we go to church in and where we do humanitarian work and things like that is full of illegal immigrants. And that's what I told the immigration lady. I was like, you know, my kids now have to relate with all these illegal immigrants, people who are impoverished, running from a terrible life somewhere else and trying to make something better, but they live well below the poverty line. And they look at my kids when they come over. I mean, I invite these kids over to my house. We have meals at my house. And when they come in, I live in a mansion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So by American standards, it'd probably be a pretty...
Yeah, pretty simple house. We would consider this probably lower middle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's clean. It's nice. It's just not fancy.
Right.
So, you know, 1,000-square-foot house is not... It's someone who lives kind of almost in an apartment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's kind of the size of it. So, but, you know, but to their standards, these kids that I'm inviting over, wow, this is everything. It's amazing. What they would want to have what I have. Now, I tell my children, I'm like, you know, because with privilege, and I told this to the immigration lady, I said, you know what? We're privileged. But with privilege comes responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
The more privilege you have, the more responsibility you have to share those blessings or, quote, privileges with others.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I said, it's so easy to kind of rail up on Facebook and rant and rave and, you know, condemn what everybody else is or isn't doing.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to your own situation, what are you doing? You know, and I feel like we kind of come to a society as that. It's easy to just kind of spout off and say, well, it's this person's fault or it's that person's fault or this institution or that entity. But in the end of the day, we each have personal privilege and responsibility. And that if the world would take charge or to live up to their responsibility, of course we would be in a different place.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you're telling this lady how privileged your kids are.
Yeah,
again, your kids are white.
Sure, they're privileged, and yeah, exactly. So I was telling her that, and then basically I said, you know, I said, we all have a level of privilege.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, you're privileged. And I said, well, in fact, before I told her that, I said, you know, really, the reality is I'm privileged too. And I said, in fact, I'm here sitting in your office today because I'm privileged.
Okay.
I said, I have a pilot's license. I grew up in a poor family. My parents couldn't pay for my pilot's license. I actually ended up getting my pilot's license working on a local airfield at a mechanic shop, waxing airplanes and helping out. An American Airlines pilot took me under his wing. He had about 7 planes, and he let me wash and wax those things. He paid me really good, and he had a trainer, and we'd trade hours with a trainer, and that was probably the main way I got my pilot's license. I got it right when I was 17, and then later on, a few years later, is when I flew out here to meet my wife. But that, you know, not everybody has that opportunity. And it's not about intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people, man, a monkey can fly. You just spend enough time training it. Look, we got all these cars that can drive themselves now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I said, it's not that. It's just about opportunity. Not everybody has the opportunity. Learning to fly, and I was telling this to the immigration officer, learning to fly is expensive. Costs a lot of money. Not everybody has that kind of money. And I happen to not have that kind of money, but I still was ended up being privileged enough to obtain that license. I said, so now I'm a pilot, so I have that privilege because very few people in the world have it. And I said, I have access to an airplane, a nice one.
Mm-hmm.
It's an 11-seater pressurized airplane that flies at 275 knots, you know, 300 and some mile an hour. I said, it's not everybody has access to that. So I said, now with that privilege comes responsibility. I said, I'm leaving the house at 4 o'clock this morning, leaving, and my wife is crying and asking me, do you really have to go? And I said, well, if it was our 14-year-old daughter, I have a daughter that's 14, I said, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I would be in this plane, and I would be flying her to the U.S. You'd be in there, and we would be gone, mm-hmm. you know, to get her the best possible treatment ever. And I said, and of course, the immigration officers know that Belize is closed. When I leave, I won't be able to come back. They don't want anybody, not even nationals. In Belize, if you're a Belizean citizen, they won't let you back in the country. Belize doesn't have coronavirus.
So just so the audience understands, your wife is crying because she knows that you may not be able to come back in the country for who knows how long.
Who knows how long or when we're going to see each other again. You know, my plan is to try and refile a permit and get in there and pick her back up at some point. And I don't really exactly have a real clear path. And of course, with COVID, everything changes. Give it a couple days and something's going to change. You know, there's going to be some new rule, some other thing. Who knows what's going to happen? So the future is fairly uncertain.
Okay, you know? So you're explaining to the immigration officer, hey, I'm taking a chance by taking this random kid I don't even know to try to save their life and get them to the hospital.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, you know, and why am I doing this? Well, because I'm privileged. And with privilege comes responsibility. I said, so, you know, you're right. I don't necessarily understand what it means to, you know, be marginalized and all these kind of things. You know, it's hard to, we don't live in someone else's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is that we are privileged, and with that privilege comes responsibility. I said, you have that privilege. And, I mean, how many Belizeans would love to have your job in the janitor that was in the break room? It's like, I'd like to have that job. You can see her nodding her head, you know.
All of a sudden, she feels privileged.
Yeah. I was like, yeah. And she's like, it's true. I mean, you know, I said, hey, it's a solid paycheck.
Jeff, if you would just pause right there for a second, we got to take a break, but we'll be right back. We're back. So let's pick it up right there. You were talking to an immigration official about her privilege and about her having a really good job that lots of people would be really jealous and eager to get. So pick it up right there. How did that conversation go?
I mean, I said, how many illegal immigrants just don't have the privilege of having a Social Security card and being able to get work mm-hmm. because they're illegal, they can't work. I said, they would just love to have that. So I said, you know, each one of us have privilege.
Mm-hmm.
And with that privilege comes responsibility. I said, you aren't responsible a day to do a medevac. You're not a pilot and don't have the plane, so it's not your responsibility. But there are people in your sphere of influence in which you can share that privilege and that blessing. I said, so, you know, it's easy to get distracted and kind of blame everybody else about how terrible, you know, the world is or how terrible, the marginalization is and how. But at the end of the day, when it comes down to you and you pass the need on your street or you see someone broken down on the side of the road and you've got four inflated tires and they've got a flat tire and you just, well, I'm kind of, I don't want to stop or I don't want to help or I mean, it's just the small details of life. You know, I'm young and youthful, and my neighbor that's next door to me is kind of old and has a hard time mowing his lawn. But, you know, why would I go over there and help him? I'm too busy. Well, you know, but I can sure rant and rave about what everybody else isn't doing. But when we neglect to use our own privilege, you know, and same thing with refugees that come in and that we, people talk about, well, immigrants, and I don't really. I'm not trying to be political or even give opinions here, but what I'm just saying is that there are people that could use assistance, could use help, share your privilege with, but it's just much easier just to blame everybody else.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's what fascinates me about you, is you've chosen and you've dedicated your life. I mean, yeah. You could have the full-on American life with
sure.
two cars, a dog,
yeah.
and
yeah.
you know, and all that, but you choose to just really do this.
Well, yeah, and that's what people don't realize, how fulfilling it is, you know, to make a difference in someone's life. And I told the immigration lady, I said, you know, I can't change what other people do, but mm-hmm. I certainly can do what I can do. And I said, this young boy, I said, he's a Nicaraguan kid. He's from Central America.
So he's a foreign kid to
he's
that.
A foreign
so
kid to Honduras.
Down.
He's
yeah.
even Nicaragua is the poorest Central American country. Ecuador and Nicaragua are both the poorest one. And you know it's a nobody. Even Belize mm-hmm. is kind of the high end of Central America. It's a wow. British colony. They don't even need a visa to go to the England.
Mm-hmm.
They can travel to Europe, and most of them get visas to the States like nothing. It, mm-hmm. You know, it's only got 350,000 people. It's got a full on U.S. embassy there. You know, it's hardly third world. I don't consider it third world. You know, and so. Anyway, and this kid, he's, you know, how many kids die in Honduras with no one to help him? I said, so this young man has now all of a sudden, I said, become extremely privileged.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to fly in a commercial, you know, in a charter flight that he could never afford. Not even mm-hmm. dream. Not even 10 years of salaries would pay for it. By both of his parents working 10 years, could they pay for that one flight? Never. And he's going to be treated by the director of St. Jude Hospital. I mean, okay, that, you talk about skilled, you know, this is, now he's privileged.
Mm-hmm.
I said, and, you know, if he survives it, he'll have that responsibility to share that privilege with someone else.
Incredible.
You know, and so
did you take the kid?
Yeah, finally, at around noon, I finally got the permit to leave, and I flew into Honduras. We picked him up, and I landed in Key West, and then flew him into Asheville, North Carolina, and the next morning early. I got into Asheville, North Carolina, at 1 o'clock in the morning, and that has a whole other, you know, story behind it, but it had its challenges. And what was neat though is that there was several people, key people along the way that helped make that a possibility. Anyway, we landed there about 12:30 at night, and they took him into the operating the ER, I think, at sometime early the next morning. And so, you know, we do the best we can. I can't, you know, I'd love to say I could solve all the kids in the world's problems, and you can't solve everyone's problems, but the things that come to your door, and I would encourage people to even step a little bit farther and not just wait for a problem to come to their door, but seek out and look for ways to, because in America we're blessed.
Yeah, people forget this, how, you know, that's why I think travel, and we've tried to take our kids outside the country some, because you forget how blessed we are in America when you go see poverty in some of these countries.
Exactly. You know, and I said that to the immigration officer. I said, these people who are rioting on the streets, I said, I have friends in Chad, Africa, who would love to be the people on the streets who are, you know, talking about how marginalized they are. They would love to have the marginalized life compared to the life that they have of starvation because of famine, because of malaria. You know, in Chad, I don't think there's a family that's there that doesn't know what it means to lose a family member to malaria.
Right.
And of course, my friend, a good colleague of mine, you know, an American, you know, white family, he buried his son in Chad, and it's the same age as my daughter, to malaria. And
right. I think we both have. So I've met, I think you're referring to Gary?
Gary, yeah.
Yeah, and his father actually came to Sandpoint, picked up a Quest aircraft.
That's correct. Yes.
So he's got a little link to this area,
yeah, absolutely,
too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But he lost a child to malaria, and another mutual friend we have is James Appel.
Appel, yeah.
Who's been a missionary doctor, if you will,
exactly,
down there.
Exactly.
And I've had him on this show. You know, he's lost actually two kids to malaria.
Mm-hmm. I know. Chad is a challenging place. And, you know,
and living in Chad.
Yeah. In Chad. It's just you know, and how many people, you know, but we don't hear about it on the news. And, of course, James LaPelle isn't on the news, and we don't hear it talk. You know, James, what a fantastic example of a person who said, you know, I'm privileged enough, and I'd like to take my privilege of being a physician and someone who's had an opportunity to get an education and give to someone, these people who don't have that privilege, and benefit their lives. And of course, in the spiritual side of things, you know, we want to impact people because we value, you know, I as a Christian value life.
Mm-hmm.
People matter. People's lives matter. They're valuable. They're just not some object.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something that's inherent in Christianity and those types of the teachings of Christianity, is that, hey, listen, you are a valuable person because you're created by God. Now, other people are motivated by, you know, different reasons, but that's one of the motivations that drive me, you know. And anyway, at the end of that conversation with the immigration officer, you know, we were all talking, and I said, you know, it's stressful. I'm stressed. It's a lot of responsibility. I'm trying to get this kid out. I got this permit issue, and, you know, here I didn't realize I needed to have an exit permit. I was supposed to be there 2 hours ago. You know, here I'm getting behind schedule, and this is a problem. And, you know, one of the immigration officers, you know, another Afro-Caribbean, He put his hand on my shoulder and he says, you know, brother, can I pray with you? Right there in the middle of that office, you know. And obviously, you know, they know my religious affinity. And I said, absolutely. And so he offered a prayer right there. You know, I felt so blessed that, you know, I felt like they understood. They knew that, to me, it has nothing to do about race or anything. If any of their children had a problem, I would sit in the same room and do the same thing for anybody that I could. If it was within my means to do that, well, I have that responsibility to share the blessings that I have, you know, the privilege that I have. Mm-hmm. So it was neat. The room got was very quiet after that, and I could see that young lady really reflecting, you know. So I hope it made an impact in their lives at some point.
Well, I am so inspired that, you know, you, instead of you know, you could be working for American Airlines or some big, you know, airline company and having a very, you know, plush job in America, but you choose to be down in South America serving, and that story is super inspiring to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there's a lot more to life than money. You know, there's a lot more, you know, people kind of think, oh, this will make you happy, but money buys stuff. But, you know, relationships, investing in people have the highest return. I mean, you can't believe what it's like when I go places. I go back to that school, and there's young people that I knew when they were 5, and now she's 21, And they run up to you and they throw their arms around you and they give you a big hug and they're so excited to see you. I'm just a normal person from Northern Michigan who, you know, through different circumstances, which I believe are divinely orientated, have the great privilege of being able to serve in this capacity. With that privilege comes responsibility.
Well, Jeff, thank you so much for coming on. Again, if people want to look you up, Moses International and MosesInternational.org.
And MoveTraining.org. Move is the name of the volunteer training center. So,
yeah, awesome. Jeff, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for the invitation.